The state of our union is getting stronger. And we've come too far to turn back now.
Presidents naturally seek to find the sunny side of our national condition. But when President Obama claims that the state of our union is anything but grave, he must know in his heart that this is not true.
This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Now maybe you can hear me. It is 9 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 25th. This is a big question edition of the State of the Union. Is the State of the Union getting better or is it grave? We heard both descriptions last night from President Obama and the Republican governor of Indiana, Mitch Daniels. We have two guests with us for our big question debate. Mike Frank is Vice President for Government Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well now. I hope you can hear me.
I can hear you. Yeah, now I can. Yeah.
Judge Legum is Vice President of Communications and New Media at the Center for American Progress. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
All righty. Let's get you first, Judge Legum. Is the State of the Union getting stronger?
Well, I think we're seeing a lot of hopeful signs. We had 200,000 jobs that were created last month, a bit more. If you just look at the private sector, I think as President Obama outlined last night, there's been some real foreign policy successes, particularly over the past year with the end of the war in Iraq and the killing of Osama bin Laden. But that said, I think there, you know, in fairness, there are a lot of challenges. We obviously are still struggling to try to turn the corner on the economy and really get things rolling, and I think that's going to be a big factor, especially politically, in this election year.
And Mike Frank, your thoughts?
Well, I think the American people tend to have a more negative assessment of their own situation. One example is but 9 or 10 polls conducted in January a year ago at the time of the last State of the Union on the kind of the basic survey question, are we going in the right or wrong direction? The wrong direction was 24 points higher than right direction. This year, same number of polls right around the time of the State of the Union, it's 36 points in the negative territory. So in that last year, a lot of Americans have I guess maybe their patience has run out. They're getting a little bit more forlorn, and they're very frustrated. The president last night was trying to sell a more optimistic, rosy view of how things are going. And, you know, from his point of view, he did a pretty good job of selecting some different metrics to try to make that point. But he has a real big uphill battle to go to convince a lot of Americans, people who may be discouraged enough to have dropped out of the job market and so on, who really, at a personal level, are feeling a lot of pain.
And Judd, tell us what the key points of his address last night, as far as you're concerned.
Well, I think the economic message was very clear, and I think one of the headlines that sort of comes out of the speech last night is him drawing a line in the sand and saying, "Look, if you are a millionaire and you're making over $1 million a year, you should pay at least 30% in taxes." And, you know, the people who did testing and already did some quick reaction to that, I think he got a very positive response to the public, and I doubt that's the last time we're going to hear from that. That's kind of his more populist message. I think on energy, you see him taking more of a middle ground, talking about renewable energy, yes, but also talking about natural gas and domestic production. And I think that's another key portion where he's maybe moving a little further to the center as far as his policies. I think those are the two things that really stuck out for me last night. And the other thing is, I think we're entering kind of a new era. We're obviously still very engaged in Afghanistan, but as the president noted, this is really the first State of the Union in nearly a decade when we didn't have any troops in Iraq, and that's been something that's been hanging over the country, and I think complicating a lot of our domestic efforts just because of the sheer amount of resources that that effort's taken.
Yeah, and Mike, your response, I guess, to some of those key points. So what about that the message of tax fairness?
Well, you know, I think one of the themes that comes across tax fairness is part of this whole thing is this sense of faith in the ability of the government to benignly look upon a situation and pick a winner, pick a loser, manipulate whether it's the tax code or some regulatory area of public policy to favor one entity, one sector over another. You're going to favor manufacturers over other categories of business. We're going to have special provisions dealing with companies that might want to relocate some of their resources and plants overseas. We're going to pick certain sectors of the energy area over others. We're going to, you know, in the tax code, we're going to use the tax code to achieve social policy ends. Conservatives tend to think that's unfair. I mean, to use the turnaround that phrase on the president, that why should some bureaucrat, why should some appointed official be smarter at this? The federal government's really not a hedge fund, you know, that can pick winners and losers or somehow, you know, look at Solyndra, look at some of the bad bets that they've made. He did point, you know, to the auto industry and said, look, here's a situation where as hedge fund manager, I went in, I made a bet with the people's money, and it's worked out fairly well. And he thinks that can be applied across the board. And that's a big divide in how conservatives and liberals view the role of government and view the ability of government to accomplish anything.
Yeah, well, but I think it's important to be realistic here when you look at the tax code and recognize that it's already being manipulated.
Sure.
That there are people, especially the very wealthy, who are able to take advantage of a lot of the loopholes and complications in the tax code to their advantage and end up paying a lower rate, both wealthy individuals and corporations like, you know, GE, who can be a very profitable corporation but pay nothing. And, you know, if you make $20,000-$25,000 a year, or maybe a better example is if you're a family making $50,000 a year, you pay a pretty hefty rate, and there's really not much you can do to get around it. So I do think that there is an issue of manipulation of the tax code, but I think we see that in the status quo too.
I think you're right. That's one of the arguments for broadening the base, lowering the rates, making everything very simple and fair. And don't forget, a lot of the reason why very high-income individuals pay at a lower rate is because so much of their income comes from the after-tax profits of companies, whether it's capital gains or dividends. And that money's already been taxed at one level. Now it's going to be taxed at 15% at the other. And so that's, you know, that's one of the, you know, people take more income in the form of dividends and cap gains because they can choose to do that, and less in the form of salary. Let's lower the rates and let's make everything relatively simple and fair. You know, I used to work for a guy named Dick Armey who had a proposal to put the entire tax code, you know, all the forms on a postcard. And that's something that's very popular both on the right and the left. On the left, because it's fair and it's the sense that everyone's going to pay some fair share of their income. And on the right, people like it because they feel it's a way to get the tax code out of business planning and allow people to make decisions with their money that will most be advantageous in terms of economic growth. So I think we agree on that. And hopefully you agree with the idea of
all the loopholes, right? We can agree occasionally. It's allowed.
Once in a while, right?
Yeah, it's okay to agree. In fact, we'll talk a little bit about whether there might be more agreement or not coming up in this election year. There was a call last night for working together. We'll see if our guests think that will happen. And we welcome your questions for our guests. We welcome your assessment of what is the State of the Union. Mike Frank is with us. He is Vice President for Government Studies at the Heritage Foundation, and Judd Legum, who is Vice President for Communications and New Media at the Center for American Progress. They are giving us their takes on last night's State of the Union address from President Obama and the Republican response from Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And as we always do every Wednesday at this time, we've also put up an online poll. You can go to WPR.org/joy or link to it on Facebook to vote in our online poll. What do you think is the State of the Union? It's going to be a mostly cloudy day today. There could be some scattered patchy light snow and freezing drizzle. High temperatures today will be in the low to mid-30s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's now 20 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, January the 25th. We're talking about the State of the Union this morning. Tomorrow morning, we'll be talking about the State of the State. Governor Walker gives his State of the State address tonight. We will carry that address live here on the Ideas Network. Our coverage starts at 7 o'clock. So the State of the State address and the Democratic response tonight and tomorrow morning, all morning long from 6 until 9, we'll get different viewpoints and analysis of the State of the State. This is a State of the Union big question where we have two guests from different political viewpoints talking over what the president had to say last night and the Republican response as well. Mike Frank from the Heritage Foundation and Judd Legum from the Center for American Progress. And let's go to a call. We have Mary in La Crosse with us first. Hello, Mary.
Good morning.
Morning.
I have a few comments to answer the question. What I think the State of the Union is, it varies depending on who you are and where you are. And the State of the Union, for me, is good. And I am totally independent voter, but I really like President Obama. I really think he's sincere. But my only experience in government was several years on a school board, and so I'm always frustrated now with the people who think president is moving so slowly. If you've ever been on the school board, you know how very, very long it takes to get anything done. And the other thing that people don't talk about is how much of this debt was brought on because of funding the Iraq war by borrowing from China. And how long is it going to take us to repay that debt? And so I have a frustration with people's impatience, and I just hope that we can get everything together, because I when I look at the Republicans and see the looks on their faces and the determination, that it tells me we're not going to be working together, and it makes me feel very sad. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mary, for the call. Let me get Mike Frank to respond to that first. Mary thinks that President Obama's getting a bum rap. It's not his fault for not creating jobs as quickly as we'd like, or for the debt.
Well, you know, if you can look at the recovery from the last recession and compare it to previous ones. And one of the things that our labor economist here, James Shirk, has noted repeatedly is that compared to other recoveries, the difference here is not so much in the number of jobs that were being destroyed every month. I mean, there's lots of millions of jobs each month are created and destroyed, and it's that difference that we get hear about and is reported. What's different is that there's a smaller number of jobs being created each month. And you can look into that and start to wonder, well, what is it that's causing massive numbers of employers to hold back on opening up another line or hiring the next employee or doing something to expand their business or create a new business? And that's been the problem. So if you go and look at the core of that, that really hasn't changed a whole lot. I mean, the job creation he's been touting in the speech and in some of the commentary I've seen amounts to something like 130, 150, 170,000 new jobs a month on average, which is below what we really need to maintain status quo and actually make progress. So a lot of the changes in the unemployment rate are reflective of people actually dropping out of the workforce, like so it's right direction, wrong direction, numbers seem to indicate. And so I think he has a lot more work to do to inspire the private sector to say, you know, we can do this on our own. We need to, you know, we have enough incentives and enough certainty in the regulatory and the tax environment to say we're going to commit resources 2, 3, 5 years out for the next expansion of our company.
Mm-hmm. Judd?
Yeah, I mean, I think yes, this is a recession that's taken us a longer time to recover the jobs in previous recessions, but you also have to look back to January 2009 and ask, well, how many recessions was it the case as it was when Obama took office, where the economy was contracting at a greater than 7% annual rate, that we were losing over 800,000 jobs per month? And I think, well, another thing we have to recognize is, look, this came after 8 years of President Bush in office, where we were doing all of the deregulatory policies that Mr. Frank and a lot of the Republican candidates are now advocating. And that didn't spur a lot of job growth. In fact, a lot of those deregulatory policies helped create a financial crisis that really triggered this recession to begin with. So I don't think the answer is returning to what we did for 8 years. I certainly wouldn't be one to suggest that everything Obama has done on the economy and the stimulus has worked perfectly, that the economy is anywhere near where we need it to go. But the real question is, what do we do moving forward? And I don't think the answer is just to do what we did before and had us in an even worse position.
Well, one observation there is the president was bemoaning the fact that people were getting mortgages who didn't understand the mortgage, who couldn't afford the mortgage, the banks were giving them out without a whole lot of scrutiny. Well, that wasn't exactly a business practice that the private sector thought up of on its own. They had incentives in law to basically increase the home ownership rate, and that was touted right, left, center for years and years and years. And it was a regulatory endeavor of both administrations from both parties. Bill Clinton, the Secretary of HUD, Cuomo at the time, aggressively pushed that. All the organizations that, like La Raza and so on, were very much behind that, cheerleading it. And as a result, a lot of people, as the home ownership rate hit 70% or so, a lot of the people coming in there at the end really couldn't afford those homes, and we had a big problem there. That was not a private sector created issue.
Well, but the private sector created issue was when we took all of those mortgages, we packaged it into extremely complex financial instruments.
Right, that's true.
And then placed huge multi-trillion-dollar bets on things that we didn't understand, and we did it in the context of a completely deregulated market.
And the rating agencies gave them AAA rating, which caused pension funds and everyone else to say, hey, I can trust this. I'm going to buy this vehicle, this financial vehicle, because it's safe. It's a AAA. In fact, they didn't know what they were rating. You're right about it. I mean, that was a big problem, and that has to be addressed, that part of it. But the incentive in the first place for those mortgages to even exist was created by government notion that, hey, we can do things, manipulate, pick winners and losers. We can do things to manipulate people's behavior to encourage more home ownership, because that's a wonderful thing to encourage. And sometimes you get too much of a good thing.
Yeah, let me ask you, moving forward, we just have a couple of minutes before our news break. Moving forward, Mike Frank, do you see any issue where the GOP-controlled House and President Obama will agree on anything?
Well, you know, there is one area that Mary was talking about, possible barriers of compromise, and it's maybe counterintuitive, but the whole notion of Medicare reform that changes the structure of Medicare toward from something that we call defined benefit, where you get a one-size-fits-all benefit package, to a premium support model, where you get a subsidy to purchase a plan of one's own choice, actually has some promise. Recently, Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, Ron Wyden, senator, Democratic senator from Oregon, teamed up and introduced a bill that's very much in that vein. It's a defined premium approach to changing the Medicare program. The interesting point about that is the very, very first version of a premium support bill ever introduced in Congress was introduced in 1978 by a Republican congressman from Michigan named David Stockman, who went on to be Reagan's OMB director, and a junior Democratic House member from Missouri by the name of Dick Gephardt. Okay, from this very inception, this very controversial third rail kind of idea has had a bipartisan lineage, and it has one today as well. I think if we can get some of the screaming and some of the groups that kind of demonize this issue out of the room and let people think about it and evaluate it on its own merit, that's a big idea that has some potential to be bipartisan and to move forward.
Judd Legum, you think so?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I think that he's right that Senator Wyden has signed on to this idea. I don't think it has much support beyond that, because I think that, you know, if you ask people, they're pretty happy with the Medicare program as it exists. I don't think people are excited about the idea of having to pay substantially more out of pocket. And I do think, though, that the area in general in how can we reform and bend the cost curve in healthcare, if we got beyond some of these ideological battles about how things are structured and started talking about the delivery of care and what we can do to make that more efficient, I do think that that's a potential area of agreement. But I think this idea of turning away from the defined benefit program of Medicare that's served seniors pretty well and kept a lot of them getting the care that they need in their later years is going to be a non-starter for the foreseeable future.
Judd Legum is Vice President for Communications and New Media at the Center for American Progress, and Mike Frank is Vice President for Government Studies at the Heritage Foundation. We'll continue to get their takes on the State of the Union after this news. So is the State of the Union getting stronger, or is the State of the Union grave? We heard both assessments last night from President Obama in his State of the Union address and the Republican response from Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels. President Obama's speech was mostly about how he wants to grow jobs and the economy and tax fairness. He also praised the military for their efforts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and in killing Osama bin Laden. Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels delivered the Republican response. He said that President Obama's policies have not been working. We welcome your thoughts and questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We have two guests with us who have different political viewpoints. Mike Frank is Vice President for Government Studies at the Heritage Foundation, and Judd Legum is Vice President for Communications and New Media at the Center for American Progress. And let's take a call next from Linda in Monroe. Hello, Linda. What did you think?
Good morning. Enjoy and guess. I listened to the Republican debate the other night as well on NBC, and they're concerned about how to pay for the debt, and their solution was to lower the income tax and cut the capital gains to zero. Now, Mr. Romney said that if that would happen, then he wouldn't have to pay any income tax. Now, I also listened last night to President Obama's State of the Union message, and after listening, I decided that he should get a second term, because he's going to do something about the insider trading that even members of Congress are involved in, which was documented in a 60 Minutes program, and he was said about raising the income tax on anybody who makes over $1 million, and that anyone who's under $250,000 to be lowered, which two-thirds of voters favored in polls as a way to solve our growing debt.
Mm-hmm. Your thoughts, Mike Frank, on that?
Well, the polling questions about asking people above $250,000 to pay more taxes tend to get a, you know, usually 70-75% level of support. But there's another interesting set of survey questions on taxes that I would like to juxtapose to that, which is when people are asked, what's about the right amount of percentage of your income that government should take from you in the form of taxes, a lot of people are in the 10-20% range. They think 15-20% at the max, sometimes 10% gets majority support as the top amount that you should lose to the government in the form of taxation. And that tells you something that I think a lot of voters just assume that people over 250, people who are millionaires, pay zero right now. And so anything is better than nothing, so they're willing to see taxes go up. So that gets the 75% level of support. But go up to what level is, I think, the part that's up for grabs. And if a lot of people were asked, would you want to see the tax rate go up to 35, 45, 50%, I think you'd see a lot of people dropping off that level when it gets more specific.
He said 30%, though, right, Judd Legum?
Yeah, and that's higher than most people would be willing to tolerate in other polls that I've seen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think the data that we've seen coming out of last night suggests otherwise. You know, I think last night he put a very fine point on it. He said that is going to be a top rate or minimum rate, essentially a floor of 30% if you made above $1 million. And there was a poll taken right afterwards asking people what they thought of the speech. I think some over 90% of the people had a positive view of the speech. But more interestingly, before the speech, 53% of people had some confidence in Obama's abilities on the economy. But afterwards, that rose up over 80%. And so I think that, I mean, look, we'll see in this election, because I think you're going to hear that 30% number over and over and over again, particularly if Mitt Romney is a nominee. So, look, you're not going to have to take it from Mike and myself. I think the American people are going to be able to weigh in and say, is this something that they're behind or not? Are they really? Do they think that's too much, and that even very wealthy people should be paying something more like a 15% rate, which is what Mitt Romney's currently making? And it really goes back to the Bush tax cuts. If Mitt Romney, just for example, because that's been in the news, if he was paying taxes under the pre-Bush tax cut rates, he would have paid about 26%. And now he pays closer to 14%. And so that's a big difference. And I think essentially what Obama is saying is, let's get back to closer to the rates of what we had in the Clinton years. And also, let's make sure that people can't, especially very wealthy people, can't manipulate the code to get these low rates.
Let me add one modest proposal, which is, I think it'd be helpful for this public debate for the for Warren Buffett's secretary's tax returns to be made public, in the sense of, where is she on the income scale, what kind of deductions does she have, and what is her actual tax liability as a percentage of her total income? Because one would imagine, if you look at the overall statistics, people who earn, $50,000, $75,000, $100,000 pay a much lower percentage of their income in the form of taxes than do people that make $250,000, $500,000, or $1 million. Okay, you end up with, because of dependent deductions and mortgage deductions and so on, as a percentage of income, those folks who are middle and lower middle income wage earners usually pay single digit percentages to the federal government in form of taxes. So that would be helpful to be able to put that into context. Is Warren Buffett's 17% rate of taxes actually lower than the secretary's?
Let me, we've talked about President Obama a lot and his State of the Union speech. I wanted Mike Frank to get you to also react to what Governor Daniels said last night, including that the State of the Union is grave and that we're essentially, in crisis because of the debt. Do you agree?
Sure. I mean, when you look at the trend lines, it's demographics. There's, 11,000 or so baby boomers turning 65 every day now, and they're going to demand something out of the government that, Judge was talking about earlier. People like Medicare, and they think it works pretty well, right? And they're going to start demanding full Medicare benefits. And then the numbers on the out years, the next 5, 10, 20, 30 years for the outlays for Medicare, for Medicaid, especially long-term care, and Social Security are daunting. They actually consume an ever greater share of the economy every year and start crowding out our options, whether it's to spend money on other domestic concerns, whether it's to fund our national security needs, whether it's to have a tax level, a tax burden that's manageable. The entitlements are what really do scare conservatives, and they've looked at it. They've worked very closely with a lot of scholars at think tanks that are left of center, like Brookings and the Urban Institute, to try to help come up with solutions to this. But this is the overriding fiscal challenge for the future, and that's what Daniels and other conservatives talk about when they get a little bit weepy and down when they talk about the future. They're looking at those projections.
Judd?
Well, I think, look, over the long term, these deficits are a real problem. But the question is, how are we going to address it? And I think that the very severe austerity measures that some of the people on the right have been advocating, it's really been, our policy, particularly at the state level and to a certain extent at the federal level, as the Republicans in the House kind of extracted concessions in order to keep the government from defaulting with the national debt debate, has really impeded job growth and employment, and as a result, that prevents the economy from getting going, which is what we really need to do over the long term to bring down the deficit. You know, so what we've seen is every month we've seen, you know, I'd say modest to okay job growth overall, but if you look within the numbers, you see, you know, 220,000 private sector jobs created, 25,000 public sector jobs lost. That puts a drag on the economy, a drag on revenues. You know, and then the other piece of this, which is the entitlement piece, I think that, yeah, you're going to have to do things to bend the cost curve and get costs under control. With something like Social Security, if you just remove the cap and had everyone pay their Social Security taxes on their full income instead of capping it at, you know, under or around $100,000, which is what we see now, Social Security would be fully funded for more than 75 years. So I don't think it's a situation where we are in full crisis. I think it's a situation where if we do some intelligent things, we can get through it and we can turn the corner. That's what, you know, it wasn't so long ago that the country was having substantial surpluses, and I think we can get back there again, and it doesn't need to be some kind of radically different system where we don't provide some of these benefits, particularly for elderly people and for the impoverished.
Let's take another call from Chris in Oshkosh. Hello, Chris.
Hey, good morning, guys. I guess my comment was a little bit along, I really believe the president, when he talked at the beginning, foreign policy is a very strong subject of his. I believe he's done exceptional, actually, in that front. And then even overnight here, you hear how they went in and they go and get hostages in Somalia. And it's like he's constantly, I believe he's doing very well and excelling there. And it gives him some strength, point of strength when he begins his talking, his speech. I kind of am looking forward now to going into a peacetime era here where he talks about half the money going to paying down the debt, half the money going into nation building. And then he's following that up with the energy policy. And I really am encouraged by that. It was a very hopeful, I felt, speech where he's, you know, he really showed how good of a speaker he is. I found myself, you know, applauding and really happy with where he was going with things. And, you know, I guess I just kind of worry, you know, he was also talking about how people, he doesn't want to go backwards, you know, it kind of was maybe a little bit of a stump speech there where he's talking about let's not go backwards. Let's go forward. But I also feel, you know, I look at things then, like, I know the state of Wisconsin here has just recently turned down $186,000 worth of funding to help out computer systems in the healthcare program. And it's like, here you got people that are just trying to go out and, you know, make it look like it's not succeeding. And I guess I feel like there's so much negativity. I thought that you did a good job of trying to bring everybody together. And then I felt that the Republican response almost like they didn't quite guess that he was going to be as, you know, they thought he might be a little more fiery, like, you know, it's all the Republicans' fault. And I don't felt he did that at all. I felt he tried to really say, let's do this. Let's weave the flag back together. Let's make this happen. And I guess those are a couple of my thoughts.
Thank you very much, Chris. I don't mean to cut you short, but we're short on time. Well, Mike Frank, why don't you respond to that first?
Well, I mean, I think the president, you're right. He tried to put the you know, happiest face on the situation both domestically and internationally, which again flies in the face of how most people seem to feel right now about that. Our standing in the world is something that deserves a whole lot more discussion than just the last couple minutes of this segment. But I'll give you one example. We, with the Wall Street Journal, publish something called the Index of Economic Freedom every year, which again is in the economic side, but it looks at international rankings of in 10 different areas of economic freedom. The net result is the United States has been dropping consistently the last few years. We're now out of the top tier of countries that we categorize as free, and we're in the mostly free category, and there's no indication that we're going to recover anytime soon from that status. So, you know, when we deal with the rest of the world, you know, we're starting to sink, and there's other nations that are rising up ahead of us now, which is not the way it had been for many, many decades. So that's an alarm bell that should be going off. And it's the world's still a dangerous place. This caller indicated he's looking forward to an era of peace, which would be great, But, you know, when you're looking at some of the rogue states out there, you're looking at what Iran's trying to do, the problems and turmoils in the Middle East are not likely to suddenly be resolved and go away, and they're likely to have ripple effects on our lives. This is a very, very treacherous time in a lot of different ways. And I think that to be dismantling our national security apparatus as rapidly as we are is a foolhardy thing to do in the current international environment and the projected likely future international environment.
Mm-hmm. Judd?
Well, I think if you look at the record, it's a very strong record that people are going to connect to. You know, we have Osama bin Laden being killed, and I think that there's a tendency to dismiss that on the right, saying that, well, any president would have done that, and you know, he shouldn't get too much credit. Well, obviously the credit goes to the people who conducted the mission, but this was something that was de-emphasized in the Bush years. I mean, President Bush is quoted saying, well, you know, he's not that worried about bin Laden. He's just one person. Obama came in. He campaigned on making it a point of emphasis. In fact, he was criticized by Romney and others the last time he was running by saying specifically that he would take action inside of Pakistan, even if he didn't have advance permission, if he thought he could get bin Laden. And as it turns out, that's exactly what he did. Also have a success in Libya, where we didn't have any United States troops killed, but we saw a pretty brutal dictator deposed. We've seen our troops get out of Iraq. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, because traditionally this is something that's used as kind of a cudgel by the Republicans. They've traditionally had an advantage, but particularly with the kind of continual record, I think that this is going to be a big story that we saw overnight, where we had a pretty risky move to, and successful, it appears, move to free some hostages that would be American hostages that were under the control of Somali pirates. It's going to be a different dynamic, and we'll have to see how it plays out.
And we promise to let you both go at this time, so we will leave it there. Thank you both very much for being with us. Judd Legum is Vice President for Communications and New Media at the Center for American Progress, and Mike Frank is Vice President for Government Studies at the Heritage Foundation, both giving us their perspectives on the State of the Union, what was said last night, and where we are going. And now we give you an opportunity to sound off on what you think about the State of the Union. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Maybe you want to frame it this way. Maybe you want to let us know if you agree with President Obama that the State of the Union is getting stronger, and that some of these policies that he introduced last night will make it even stronger? Or do you agree with the Republican response from Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, who said that big government is not the answer and more government spending is not the answer, and that the State of the Union was grave because of all the government spending? So you let us know. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Time now for you to answer the question, what is the State of the Union? Our first caller is Steve in Solon Springs. Hi, Steve.
Good morning.
Morning.
We'll go here, 30 seconds. We haven't passed a budget in 1,000 days. I believe that the State of the Union is in flux. I think that Harry Reid is the impediment in acting President of the United States. I don't blame Barack Obama for this mess. I blame 30 years of mismanagement by both parties. And this election is the most important election in well over 100 years. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Did that very well. 25 seconds. Lenny in Madison, what do you think? Lenny, go ahead.
Yeah. I was impressed with the president's speech, because I think that he was on target about a lot of things, like the economy and this not being an issue of class warfare, and I think he was addressing both parties, and that's important because Congress is dysfunctional.
All right. Thank you very much, Lenny. Alex, what do you think about the State of the Union? Alex, are you there?
Yes. Sorry, I didn't realize that was my turn. I just wanted to say that basically disagree with your guess that the policies that Obama is continuing are the same policies of the previous President Bush, especially with the foreign policy. Your guest agreed that everything was great. I think he signed into law this National Defense Authorization Act. He's the first president to have a U.S. citizen assassinated. I mean, these are terrible, terrible precedents. So I just think it's the same core policies of all the previous administrations. There's no real change.
Thank you very much. Next, we go to Carrie in Augusta. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, good morning. The way I look at it is we are coming out of a great recession. I thank President Obama for leading us through this very dire situation. I look forward to the next 5 years that he is in office.
Thank you very much. And we do have time for you, a 30-second straw poll, a sound off for you to tell us your assessment of the State of the Union. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And our next caller is Nancy in Sheldon. Hello, Nancy.
Good morning. I have a comment. We have one of the greatest presidents since John F. Kennedy and some of the greater ones from before. I agree 100% with him. He's doing fine. The Congress needs to get on board with him, both Democrats and Republicans, and our country will improve. Thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Now we go to Ray in Lena. Hello, Ray.
Hi. I'm worried about the State of the Union. We've just spent the last generation figuring out how we can spend more money as a value or more of our value in houses, and now we're doing it with our GDP, and I just don't see this working. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much. That'll do it for our sound off, our straw poll on the State of the Union. But we do have a poll online where we're asking you what you think about the State of the Union. Right now, according to that online poll, which you can access at WPR.org/joy or on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, we have 30% of you saying that we are headed in the right direction. 51% of you thinking we're going backwards. So 51% think that we're going in the wrong direction. And 19% of you just sigh. So go ahead and vote online if you'd like to do that. And stay with us. We'll have more reaction and analysis to the State of the Union address and the Republican response. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we have a wide variety of guests and a lot more opportunity for you to chime in as well in our 8 o'clock hour. We'll hear from political analysts and commentators and economists. And we also have a Democratic U.S. Representative Ron Kind lined up to call in, and Republican U.S. Representative Tom Petri is going to join us as well. So lots more reaction and analysis of the State of the Union coming up here on the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Thanks to Rob Ferret, to Bill Martins, and to Amanda Magnus for producing these programs. This is the Ideas Network.